This is Images. I'm Fred Martino. Thanks for joining us. Well, never thought I'd be saying this. Carrie Hamblin is with me today. Yes, that Carrie Hamblin, the former host of this program, operations manager for KRWG and Morning Edition anchor. Carrie has been working in a new position as executive director of the Las Cruces Green Chamber of Commerce. Carrie, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, well, thank you for having me here. I appreciate it.
I never thought I'd be interviewing you before.
It's a bizarre circumstance that where we're sitting on different sides of the desk now. It's a little weird.
And I appreciate you doing this. I know it, from previous experience, it's much more comfortable to be on this side.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Asking the questions
rather
than having to answer them.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me about your new job.
Well, my new job, I've been in it since April 9th of this year, and have been the executive director of the Green Chamber of Commerce, as you said. And what I do, it's a variety of things. The position is funded by two sources. One is the Partnership for Responsible Business, which is a 501c3. And the money from that is outreach and education. And so a lot of the programs that I've been developing over the last couple of months have been under the Partnership for Responsible Business. The other part of that is our membership. So some of the programs that I develop are things that would be beneficial to our members. For example, we just had a recycling training workshop that can help members and even not members of the Green Chamber increase their recycling efforts, which in the long run reduces their overhead and increases their profit. And so when I can develop programs that help our local businesses thrive and continue to thrive and maybe increase a profit and continue to serve the community, then that's what I'm doing. So kind of in a nutshell, it's, you know, programming and outreach and education, but also opportunities to get our businesses to really talk to other people, increase their business, public awareness about what they do.
All right. So what's been the biggest surprise for you moving from broadcasting to leading a nonprofit organization?
Well, you know, the nonprofit stuff has really been something that I've been doing for quite some time. I'm also the co-chair of our annual Southern New Mexico Gay Pride, which is a nonprofit, and PFLAG Las Cruces, which is a nonprofit under the national nonprofit of PFLAG throughout the country. And so the nonprofit work really hasn't been a whole lot of different. It's just now getting paid to do it because PFLAG and Pride are both voluntary positions. And then also here with the public radio station, you know, it's all based on listener funds. And so with the Green Chamber, you know, it's interesting for me in really getting out and talking to our businesses, because many of these folks are people that I know, my partner and I go to on a regular basis. You know, a couple of years ago when the economy really started affecting local businesses, my partner and I made a conscious effort to not support the chains. And it's not that the chains aren't good, but there are many people who are friends of ours that run locally owned businesses that we wanted to make sure stayed in business. So the chains were going to be fine, really, in the long run. It's, you know, our local restaurants and our local hardware stores and you know, shops that we wanted to make sure stayed in business. So it worked out to where with the Green Chamber, because of our personal philosophy of supporting local businesses, this is now an opportunity for me to do it on a much more public level and talk about the things that I'm passionate about. You know, I love these businesses. These are people that I love and adore who make really good food or have a really good service or do something for the community. So why not do it now in this capacity as executive director? So the challenge is getting out there. You know, it's once, for me, some of the, I think the main challenge was actually learning the language when we talk about sustainability and local economies. But that didn't take very long because I just applied it to what I was doing personally and have been able to talk about it since. So I'm happy about it.
And it's been great to see you teach folks in the community about what you're doing personally. Many folks may have recently seen an article in the newspaper how you recycle glass bottles at your home.
Absolutely.
Tell me about this.
Well, it all started with a conversation that I was having with Suzanne Michaels, who's the one who wrote that article. Suzanne Michaels was a television newscaster for years in El Paso and now does a lot of marketing for Friedman Recycling, the South Central Solid Waste Authority. She's really used her talents now to talk about things that are good for the environment. And so we were having a conversation because I was writing a little bit of a blurb for our monthly ad in the Sun News about recycling and what it means to be green. And so I called her up and was asking her about, you know, glass recycling. Every time I go somewhere and we talk about recycling, people ask, why can't we recycle glass? Here's the reason why you can't recycle glass. You know, it took about five to six years roughly to get the community to understand the value of having curbside recycling. And so to pay a couple extra dollars on your utility bill a month to have curbside recycling. I think many people have noticed that now their recycling bins are filled to the rim, whereas their waste bins are actually maybe two bags. And that's a good thing. That's what you want. And so I was having a conversation with Suzanne about recycling glass, and she told me that the reason why we can't recycle glass at the moment is because the closest recycling plant for glass is in Phoenix. And so what would happen is that they would have to pay $1,800 for a truck. That's how much it costs to take a truck full of glass, like we're thinking of a, you know, an 18-wheeler, a truck full of glass to Phoenix, to the recycling plant there. In turn, there would be $300 roughly paid for that entire 18-wheeler of glass. That's how much you would be able to get in return. If you recycle cans, you know, it's, you know, 35 cents a pound. With glass, it would be $300 for an entire truck of glass. And so the actual cost of that expenditure is $1,500, which means that we, if we wanted glass recycling, would have to pay our share of that $1,500. And who knows how many times a month that would happen. And I don't think the community at this moment is ready to do that. However, we have challenges of recycling glass. So when I was talking to Suzanne about that, I told her about what I do. We have, you know, quite a few gatherings at our house, and, you know, it kills us to have these bottles left over. Beer bottles, you know, I throw out to FreeCycle Las Cruces. It's FreeCycle LC. You can Google. It's a Yahoo group. And the whole idea of FreeCycle Las Cruces is to keep things out of the landfill. Well, we have a lot of people who brew their own beer, and they're looking for bottles. And so I offer that out, you know, with the bottles that somebody, and usually somebody will snatch them up right away, and they come and pick them up. Strongly recommend FreeCycle Las Cruces. The other thing is that the wine bottles, you know, there's a site called Pinterest, which is very addicting for a lot of people, saw on there how to cut glass bottles. And so, you know, we have a patio. I'm doing a lot of home remodeling. You know that I do that on the house. And we have a patio in the backyard where the pavers are starting to come up. And they're, you know, they just weren't set right. They didn't have the right materials to put them in. And so what I'm doing is I'm taking up, you know, brick by brick of these, you know, standard cinder block pavers and cutting glass bottles and using the bottoms. So it's, you know, you imagine a glass bottle that's cut roughly in half. Some people use them, if you have the tools, you can sand them down and use them as wine glasses. What I'm doing, just because it's labor-intensive to sand them down, is I'm cutting them, and so you'll figure from the bottom up about 3 inches, and I turn them upside down so that the bottom is facing up, and I put them in the ground, and I pound them in the ground, and I'm slowly but surely making a new patio out of those bottoms. So what you'll see in the long run, what I visualize, is that there will be a border with bricks, and then it will be filled in with pea gravel, which is, you know, very, very small, like if you see river rock that you see in your xeriscaping, but very, very tiny, and filling that in. So all you'll see will be the rings of the wine bottles in there, and that will be a contained patio in our backyard.
So essentially glass pavers. Basically.
It's glass pavers, yeah. And so, you know, so it's turned out to be, it's a long-term project, obviously, because cutting them, I was told that you can actually cut the wine bottles on a wet saw for a tile cutter, which I might try. But obviously, always safety gear, always wearing glasses, you know, protective glasses, making sure that, you know, if you need to have gloves, use gloves because it's glass. I've certainly cut my finger open once, thankfully, so far on that. So always using caution when you're cutting glass. But it's a very simple process, actually. It's not, it's just, it's time consuming.
And for folks who aren't as creative as you are, Gary, you mentioned that they can take their glass to Target. Is that right?
Yes, actually Target. The reason why they can take them to Target, and I spoke with the managers of Target when I was writing this little recycling blurb on what it means to be green, called up the manager of Target and asked them, you know, why can you do this? And it's because they have trucks, 18-wheelers, that bring merchandise to the local store, and the managers of Target, and I'm I don't know if it's actually a nationwide thing. I would assume that it is, that the Target here will have these empty trucks that they have to take back to get to go and get more merchandise and to go to another store. So they have made an effort to put whatever glass they get recycled in those empty trucks en route to Phoenix, so or wherever they take them, what makes the most sense for them in terms of their routes. So that's a good thing, in the meantime. However, in the long run, I think that's great that Target's doing that, but I really like to, from the Green Chamber of Commerce, come up with a way of maybe encouraging somebody who is an entrepreneur to start a local business where those materials from the glass, it can be actually used in the material that you use to repave streets. And so it would be pulverized and crushed down into, I believe, pebbles. I don't know the exact details on that. But maybe there's somebody who would like to start a business, and the Green Chamber really wants to develop what's called a Green Entrepreneurial Summit coming up in the spring, where we're putting together people with the Small Business Association, with SCORE, with West, the Arrowhead Center here on campus, and bringing together would-be entrepreneurs to come up with ideas for that. And so if we can have somebody who would start a business that would repurpose this glass and sell it to the city and the county to repave our surfaces, our road surfaces, but also they use it in padding for pipes when they're laying it in the ground. They need a drainable surface underneath the water pipes that you can put it there. And so, there are purposes that we can, there are things that we can use this for, but it's just we don't have somebody locally who can do it. And I think that's where we need to go in the meantime, because I don't see citizens here really ready to pay, maybe $20 extra on their utility bill. That's just a ballpark figure. But this is another solution in the meantime of using those, because even wineries here can't reuse their bottles. They have to have them sanitized. And we don't have a site here that can sanitize them. And so if you go to a winery, you'll see that their bottles are in the garbage, and it's because they can't reuse them. And I'm like, that's a shame. So maybe we can have somebody who would have a business here for our local wineries that would sanitize those bottles, and then it would cut costs for our local wineries. And they would be able to use their bottles again because they'd be sanitized in a way that the health department would approve of. And then they don't have to spend as much on bottles.
All right. Sounds like you're giving some folks some business ideas.
I hope so.
Well, speaking of businesses, you just launched a New Mexico recycling recognition program that is statewide, and you want to encourage local businesses that recycle to self-nominate for this.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is a statewide partnership between the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce, including the Las Cruces chapter, as well as the Southwestern chapter in Silver City, Taos, Santa Fe, and Albuquerque. And so throughout the state, a woman by the name of English Bird, who is the director of the New Mexico Recycling Coalition, as well as Chris Campbell, who is from the New Mexico IEE Institute for Pollution, they are going around the state and running these recycling training workshops. And these are for any business. We just had ours early in the month of September. And we had 25 people show up from various businesses. And they had tremendous ideas about what they can do and what they're doing now to reduce their waste. Ultimately, the idea is for you as a business, most of our recycling comes from commercial, or most of the waste comes from commercial businesses. So if you think about the amount of paper that is used, the amount of packaging that is used, any of materials of, for example, using paper plates or forks in the lunchroom. There are a variety of ideas that a business can apply to their business practices to reduce the amount of waste and then increase the recycling. So maybe using, if they have a lunchroom, having washable dinner, lunchware, plates and forks, so that people aren't throwing those away or using plastic forks or paper plates or even styrofoam plates, which are horrible. Also increasing their paper, decreasing their paper usage, but increasing their use of recycled paper. So setting up their printer to automatically print double side. Or if you have to print on one side, like with my notes here, I've printed on one side. I'm taking that back to my office, and I'm going to use it for other things, and I'm going to print on the other side. And so there are a variety of things. So this program, through the New Mexico Recycling Coalition, as well as the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce, will encourage businesses, or so many businesses who are doing great things, that they can nominate to be recognized. And the Las Cruces Green Chamber will be recognizing people on or around November 15th, which is America Recycles Day. So we'll be recognizing people who do outstanding work in recycling, but also recognize those who have nominated. So you can nominate, you can self-nominate by going to the New Mexico Green Chamber webpage, nmgreenchamber.com, and look under programs, and you'll see the recycling recognition program.
Okay, great information there. And speaking of events, on October 5th, I see you have one coming up here, the second annual Renewable Energy and Clean Technology Conference. Tell me all about this.
Well, this is the second conference, and it's actually becoming an annual event. Last year, it was at the Rio Grande Theater, and it was a day long of different speakers talking about different topics of renewable energy. And we, through the New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce, are doing this now every year as an event. And so we have a variety of topics talking about the future of renewable energy. Senator Jeff Bingaman will be talking about the future of renewable energy in New Mexico. Senator Bingaman has been really proactive in the clean technology policies that he's introducing. He actually introduced some clean technology policies. It was the Clean Energy Standard Act of 2012, which helps clean energy sources, increasing that progress by creating one national standard for clean energy sources and encouraging people to move toward renewable energy. So wind, solar, even biofuels that we have down here at Sapphire, which is here on the campus. And so he took time out of his schedule to really try to introduce this measure requiring utilities to generate an increasing amount of the country's electricity through renewable energy. So we have Senator Bingaman really as the anchor of this conference. But we have a variety of people talking about the future of clean energy and renewable technology, financing for renewable energy, a variety of concepts, solar, wind, that will be all discussed. And this is being held at the Las Cruces Convention Center this year, which we love the opportunity at the Rio Grande Theater. However, the Convention Center is a green building. It is a LEED certified building. And just to give you an idea, LEED certification is incredibly difficult to get. I mean, you have to go through many, many hoops to get LEED certification. So it's a logical partnership to have with the Las Cruces Convention Center. David Hicks there is the manager, and he's been doing a tremendous job of accommodating our conference. And so we have a variety of breakout sessions. We'll have a keynote speaker. We'll have our welcoming lunch and a welcoming breakfast in the morning. We're expecting anywhere from 250 to 300 people at this conference.
That should be very exciting. You know, along these lines of clean energy, one of the things we've done a number of reports on at KRWG, radio and television, as a matter of fact, involves large-scale solar and wind energy projects. And as you're aware, the Obama administration is working to fast-track these projects on federal lands, including a tract here in the Las Cruces area. A lot of people think that this could be a game changer. What are your thoughts on this, Carrie, in terms of encouraging utility companies to see an example on federal lands and take it a step further and trying to make these kind of projects as widespread as coal-powered plants, natural gas power plants, all across the country?
Well, I think it's really a no-brainer when we're looking at these resources that happen every single second of the day. You know, when we have sun, when we have wind, especially in March, in generating for wind power, I think it's a great opportunity for businesses to, including utilities, to jump on this bandwagon. I mean, it's long overdue. I mean, New Mexico has these wide open spaces, and certainly we want to protect those spaces, those pristine areas, and I know that we're going to talk about the Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks, protecting some of those areas, but also recognizing the potential that we have in using solar power, I mean, especially solar power. In the Southwest, I don't understand why we don't have more solar-powered tracks, to generate that energy. We have Tres Amigas, which is, I think you're familiar with that, which will link these different, electrical sources, and the CEO of Tres Amigas will will be at our conference as well, talking about the future of what Tres Amigos will be doing. And ultimately what it's going to be doing is linking the different power sources from east and west, and allowing us to use renewable energy a lot more efficiently and effectively throughout the country, and especially in this region. But getting back to your question, that, you know, I just a disclaimer, the Green Chamber, Las Cruces, New Mexico Green Chamber, any of the chapters, we're nonpartisan. So we don't support candidates. However, we do follow with legislation. And so the fact that the Obama administration is trying to move this, I mean, obviously there are going to be two sides to this issue. But I think it's a really great start for a dialogue to have and to continue. But for me, I think it's also that we really need to move on it. I mean, there's a certain part where you can just talk it to death. When really the research out there shows and the statistics show that this is something that will be beneficial to not only our environment and our planet, but also be something that we can use and be incredibly innovative in terms of power supply and how we use our energy. But I think it also creates a dialogue for consumers like you and me on how we use our appliances, and are we turning off our computers at home, or are we turning off our computers in our office, and understanding really where that power comes from. With coal energy, I mean, that we know that it's, you know, the fumes from that destroy the atmosphere. And so we do need to come up with new ways, and the ways are there. It's not that we have to come up with them. The ways are there to use renewable energy that doesn't cause harm to the environment, and how can we harness that?
And I think what's often overlooked in this discussion that it isn't understood by a lot of folks is that when you look at renewable energy, solar, wind energy, that energy is used here. Whereas, you know, very often one of the very important points that's overlooked about the fossil fuel industry, whether that be coal or gas or oil, a lot of that energy is sold to other countries. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that by increasing production of fossil fuels in this country, we're leading to energy independence for this country, because it is often sold overseas. A very important point that's often overlooked in coverage of these issues.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I think if we even just look to, like, the small, you know, a homeowner who gets solar panels put on their house, and they find that they can see in their bill that they're actually getting money back. You know, when we look at that at the larger scale, look at what we can do as a country if we apply these technologies to how we use energy as a country, you know, excluding what we do in exporting our energy sources and oil especially, but that we can become independent and use this energy that we have around us all the time and are able to make money as a homeowner. Can you imagine what we can do if we can do that but not damage the environment and not pull resources from the earth that are starting to dwindle and that we may not have down the line? So we're kind of being forced to look at renewable energy and clean technology, but I think we need to move forward on it before it's a dire situation where we're like, oh, we only have a 1,000 barrels left. I don't want us to get there.
Yeah, such an important issue and important to talk about. You know, one of the things that strikes me, and we're going to move on, but before we do, I want to ask you about this. I know as you mentioned, you're nonpartisan, so you may deal in public policy, but not with specific candidates. However, recently this came up, this whole issue of having a dialogue about climate change and what we can do to stop it, because, as you know, President Obama has been a big supporter of clean energy, and he mentioned it in his nomination speech. And in perhaps one of the most tense moments of the speech, he said that climate change was, quote, not a joke. And some think that he was referring to comments made by Mitt Romney in his nomination speech, chiding President Obama's commitment to fighting pollution, where Mitt Romney mentioned that President Obama had promised to not allow the oceans to rise. And this was really surprising to a lot of people in a nomination speech to say that. Overall, when you think about this, about trying to advance a civil dialogue about climate change, what do you make of that?
You know, it's such a hot button issue because there's, you know, two different schools of thought. There's one that, you know, that climate change is happening and that we need to address it. And then there's another school of thought that climate change isn't happening and that the numbers are being made up. One way or the other, we have things that are happening around our planet that, you know, may or may not be part of the natural cycle. But they are impacting species, they are impacting lands, they are impacting our water resources. And I think, you know, it's important to, you know, kind of put the partisan bickering aside and actually look at what's happening and what we're doing to contribute that, to that. And what we need to do as the people who are contributing to that, what we need to do to prevent it from getting worse. Because, you know, when you hear about the ice caps melting at a rapid rate, or you read about species of fish or marine animals that are dying off and are becoming extinct, you know, we're having an impact on that. And I think it's something that we really need to not ignore and not let the political bickering, you know, take over and actually just do something to address it. So, you know, it will be really interesting to see what happens in November, you know, with that and the dialogue. You know, I mean, well, we're hearing the political rhetoric left and right, you know, from either side. And, you know, sometimes it just gets overwhelming and sometimes just ridiculous. And I, whatever party is, you know, sometimes you just have to just, you know, look at the issues and not look at the rhetoric.
And look at the facts. And yeah, that's the bottom line. Well, one thing for sure that is a fact, I would not be surprised if southern New Mexico is on the Obama administration's radar right now, because folks are lobbying the administration to create a new national monument. And I know that this is something that the Green Chamber supports. Tell me about it.
Well, this started really right after I came on board, that we, as a chamber, wrote a letter to President Obama asking him to use his powers under the Antiquities Act. And that's to designate three areas. The Friends of the Oregon Mountains and the Wilderness Alliance actually spearheaded this movement to have three areas designated as national monuments. And it's the area around Kilburn Hole, also the area around the Paleozoic trackways. The Paleozoic trackways are already protected. And then an area, but there's an area outside of that, and then an area along the base of the Oregon Mountains. Senator Pierce has proposed to just have the one area along the Oregon Mountains. And there's been a lot of dialogue about, you know, that's a lot of land. The three different areas of national monument designation are way too much. You know, we don't need to have the government taking over. I mean, there are certainly, you know, valid arguments on either side. And given that the Green Chamber is nonpartisan, you know, those issues are aside. What we do know is there is a nonpartisan think tank group called the Headwaters Institute, and they conducted a study to see the impact of national monuments on local economies. And White Sands National Monument, I believe, contributes $2 to $4 million a year in our local economy. And that's people coming and staying in Las Cruces, supporting our restaurants, staying at our hotels, supporting local jobs. And so if we have three national monuments designated here, it would create new jobs locally. It would bring money into our local economy. And it would also be an appeal for people to come and visit this area. So the area around the Paleozoic trackways, there are aerial targets that were used historically, aerial targets used by the Air Force based out of Deming in World War II, that they would drop bombs as target practice. There are also a tremendous amount of petroglyph sites out there. There's also a site that was one of the original Butterfield Trail stop sites there. Kilburn Hole is where the space program used to practice before they went to the moon, riding the rovers on the moon. And the Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks, I mean, that's a no-brainer just because it's such a beautiful site. So from an economic perspective, that's where the Green Chamber supports this initiative in terms of how it would support our local jobs, support our local economy, and bring people to the community.
Carrie, I only have about a minute left, but I have to say this. One of the other things that's not mentioned in this discussion about the monument that I think is worthy of discussion, because it's so important, and recently at a water conference at New Mexico State University, this came up, we are taking significantly more water from our aquifers than is being replaced. So by having a monument which will ensure that it restricts the development that uses water, we may be also preserving our water supply by having a new national monument.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it would be a great way to go.
All right, very interesting stuff. And Carrie Hamblin is the executive director of the Las Cruces Green Chamber of Commerce. She's been joining us today on Images. Carrie, it's always a pleasure to have you here. I hope you will come back anytime you have something to talk about with the Green Chamber.
Oh, well, I appreciate that offer. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carrie. Mm-hmm. And thank you for joining us on Images. I'm Fred Martino. Hope you have a wonderful week. We'll look for you again next week. And of course, always online at KRWG.